the headquarters of Ramsey Solutions, broadcasting from the Pods Moving and Storage Studios. It's the Ramsey Show, where we help people build wealth, do work that they love, and create actual amazing relationships. Rachel Cruz, number one best-selling author multiple times, co-host of the popular afternoon Smart Money Happy Hour. I just assumed happy hours were in the afternoon. Hey, yeah, so check it out on podcast on the Ramsey Networks there, and you can be part of all of that and enjoy her. She's with me today, my daughter, answering your questions at 888-825-5225. Sean's in Los Angeles. Hey, Sean, how are you?
I'm doing well. How about you?
Better than I deserve. What's up?
Yeah, I just had a quick question for you guys. So I'm a first-gen American immigrant family, grew up a low-middle income. And so I went through college, debt-free, I made sure to go on scholarship, and then I recently graduated and got a job. And then the first year, I made $180K.
and with that, I love it!
Yeah.
Way to go! Yeah, what are you doing 1 year out of college for $180K? That's impressive.
So my job required me to do a lot of travel. So, you know, I sold my car during the peak of the pandemic to get...
Now, what do you do for a living that makes $180K?
Oh, I am an aerospace engineer.
Oh, I guess you are. Way to go, man. Amazing. Good for
yeah,
you.
Yeah, appreciate it.
I bet your mom and dad are just sitting around smiling.
Yeah.
My son, the genius.
So, yeah, my main question was basically, so I had to buy a new car when I came back. Like switch jobs, and now that I'm in Los Angeles, you know, I'm trying to max out my retirement and everything, and I enjoy my job, but it's kind of, I grew up in a situation where, you know, we made sure to, you know, save what we can, don't buy anything unnecessary, and recently I've been kind of, I've had like a good amount of wealth in the savings and everything like that, and my question is more of how to kind of get past the idea of, you know, scared to spend it, and then on top of that, how to invest it properly so that I don't spend too much and kind of build a budget for myself for the future.
Yeah. Where's your family from, Sean?
We're based out of, so my family's from India originally.
India. Okay. That's great. Yeah. You know, I think when it comes to the idea of giving yourself permission to spend, it's always helpful for me, Sean, to have something visual that I see with my numbers. So that would be a budget. And doing it, knowing exactly where my expenses, where my money's going, to know that my bases are covered, that I'm doing quote unquote what I'm supposed to be doing with money, right? So making sure retirement's good, we're saving for the future, all of that is done. And when you look at that and say, okay, and then I have some left over, and actually putting it in line items and kind of like making yourself, forcing yourself to spend, which sounds kind of funny, but when we talk about money a lot, it's almost like building a muscle, and spending is one of those muscles that you have to build. If you're not used to it, or you're scared and you have that kind of more scarcity mentality, it is very difficult to enjoy your money and just to spend. So if you're in a position where you do have that extra money every month, I would put it in a line item. And again, it can be a small percentage. You don't have to do anything crazy, but I would put it in a line item and make yourself spend it. Again, whether that's going to a concert, whether that's going out to eat, whether that's going on a trip, like whatever that looks like, but practicing spending and enjoying it, because that is part of living.
Yeah. Being generous, investing, and spending wisely. These are the three things you can do. Okay?
Gotcha.
And spending wisely is the enjoyment factor, so to speak. You'll find later as you go along that generosity is actually more enjoyable than all of it. But anyway, you need to be doing all three at all times. Then when you're doing a budget, like Rachel's saying, we have the world's best budgeting app that you can use for free. It's called Every Dollar. And the reason it's called Every Dollar is every month you should give every dollar a name, every dollar a mission, every dollar an assignment. And here's what's interesting. Once you're doing that, very few people mess up. Because we do stupid stuff when we don't see it in perspective to the other things. Like, oh, I can afford that. Oh, wait, I can't buy groceries. You know, but if you got groceries down beside it, you go, oh, I can't afford that. But if you buy a couch and you go, well, and I've still got money to do all the other stuff, and it was allocated with one of the dollar line items, like Rachel was saying, then there's no guilt for buying the couch because you didn't not pay your rent because you bought a couch. But But when you just go, oh, I'm going to buy a couch on impulse, it's not in it doesn't have the perspective, the holistic perspective of your whole picture that the budget gives you. Mm-hmm. That's when people make mistakes. But very few people do stupid stuff on purpose. You know,
right?
Like
right.
We're going to write down and plan to do stupid stuff. That just, people don't do that. So that's why the budget fixes that for you. It'll cause you to be careful in all of it, in generosity, in spending, and in investing, and do it very, very intentional. Right. And then, of course, we're going to tell you to take the free money that you can find in that budget and work up what we call the baby steps, which is the shortest, fastest, right way to become wealthy.
Gotcha. Yeah, because, after my last job, and I spent money on getting a brand new car, and I didn't take any loans because the idea of having to owe someone else
good.
Any form is kind of paranoia for me.
Good.
So I carry about $70K and just in my as an emergency plan. I know I don't need that much. And I know I can invest about $40K of that.
Yeah, then do.
Have plenty of leftover.
Then do.
So I guess investing portion wise, do you guys have any recommendations as far as how to make sure whether that's passive or kind of opportunities in the stock market or other ways to, I guess, further my wealth?
Tell you what, I'm going to send you a copy of the book, The Total Money Makeover, which is going to walk you right up the baby steps, what to do first, what to do second. When you get to what's called baby step four, you'll start putting 15, it's the first time you invest, you'll start putting 15% of your income into retirement savings, Roth IRAs and 401ks and good growth stock mutual funds. So hang on, we'll have Austin and the team pick up and send you a Total Money Makeover book. It's the baby steps on steroids. It'll show you every little thing on what to do with the baby steps. Sam is with us in Boston. Hey, Sam, how are you?
I'm doing amazing. How are you doing, Dave?
Better than I deserve. How can we help?
Yeah, so I'm calling in. I got a career question for you guys. I recently just moved into baby step three and just got engaged, which is super exciting. I'm calling because I work as a assistant project manager for a infrastructure company, and I travel for work. I live in upstate New Hampshire, so kind of outside of Boston by just a couple of hours. I live in a small town up in the White Mountains. But I'm calling because I'm kind of struggling, being, newly engaged and everything. Eventually, I don't want traveling to be a long-term.
How much do you travel?
Long-term. So I'm out on the road every week. Right now, for example.
5 days a week?
It depends on the week and what's going on with the project. But yeah. I'm fortunate to be able to go home on weekends.
Yeah. Sounds like you're changing jobs. I mean, it's pretty simple.
Not a sustainable lifestyle with the family.
Not what you want to do. You don't want to be gone 5 days a week, you said. And I don't think they're going to stop you from doing that because they need you to go do that. That's why they hired you. Sorry to cut you short, but it is pretty much that simple. Hey, folks, Dave Ramsey here. There are moments in life we don't want to forget, like your kid's graduation or the once-in-a-lifetime trip. For the big moments, the everyday moments, and everything in between, every dollar is there to help you budget for all of it. It's the simple budgeting app that helps you plan, save, and spend for the important things. Budget for the life you really want, every moment of it. Download the app or check the link in the show notes to create your free account today. Every dollar. Rachel Cruz, Ramsey Personality, is my co-host today. Justin is in Austin, Texas. Hi, Justin. Welcome to the Ramsey Show.
Thank you for having me. It's an honor to be on.
Certainly. How can we help?
I have a kind of what would Dave do question. My wife is looking to leave education and go back to get her master's to become a therapist. And so I'm looking for the best way to approach to cash flow this and not take out any debt. We currently make about $200,000 a year. The only debt we have is our home and one rental, which we are aggressively paying off and trying to get paid off in the next 3 years. Mm-hmm. And so my big question is, should I suspend retirement knowing I get a generous match from my employer to help cash flow this, or just tighten up the budget? I'm curious what you would do.
So a master's in counseling.
Correct.
Okay. To do what?
to be a therapist to counsel families, adolescents, you know, families in need, those kind of things.
Okay. So as you're probably already aware, there is a vast spectrum of potential cost on this. You can spend a lot or a little.
And we already have the cost, so I know exactly how much it's going to cost me per month.
How much is it going to cost you?
Right about $1,400. And that's the exact amount before tax if I was to pause my retirement that I'd be getting each month.
Yeah. And you said your household income, those $200?
Correct.
Why can't you just cash flow $1,400 and keep doing your retirement?
And that's what we're thinking about doing. We just didn't know if it'd be wise to suspend, knowing that she could potentially come out of this making, you know, right around 80 to 100K a year, and then that would just make things not so tight. So, again, I don't want to sacrifice a retirement, but if I had to, I'm willing to. I just, again, want to make sure I'm making the right decision.
I would.
Yeah, it would be more sacrificing lifestyle, Justin, than retirement is what we would probably pick. Hmm. And is it a two-year program?
Minimum 2 year, could be 2.5-ish, depending on her internships. Yep.
Gotcha. And how old are you guys?
I'm 38. She's 34.
Okay. Yeah. I mean, I would continue to probably just do retirements. Yeah, I would. And then sacrifice lifestyle. I mean, I know it makes it kind of tight, and I don't know if even there's a extra work you could pick up just as a side hustle, you know, every other week for a little bit just to bring in some extra cash. You could do that as well.
Does she quit while she's doing this?
So she's going to, the first year when she's just doing classes, she's going to work part-time, so that will help offset a little bit of the cost. But then as she goes into her clinicals or internships, that will increase where she might not
be. So when all of that happens, what's the household income?
So my income is, well, the $200 is not what she's making right now. So anything she makes will be additional to that.
Oh, so you make $200. Okay.
Correct.
Yeah, that's great then, because if she's working part-time a little bit next year, then that's going to give you guys some breathing room. And then it's really only a year and maybe a few months of it being really focused on just cutting some lifestyle if you need to.
I mean, she makes $15,000 a year. She cash flowed it.
Correct, yeah, which is what we're going to try to do. Just we're not sure of the workload just yet, but ideally we would like to not sacrifice retirement if we didn't have to.
I don't think you have to. I think you have to sacrifice something else. You make $200. You need $15,000.
Yeah, no, I agree.
Yeah, I think you cut. I think you don't go on vacation because we have a greater goal. I think we back Christmas down because you have a greater goal. I think we quit going out to eat so dadgum much because you have a greater goal, or whatever your lifestyle, whatever you want to lump into the lifestyle category. What Rachel was saying is dead on. Yeah, this is a lifestyle cut, and again, it's temporary for a greater goal, and it's a wonderful greater goal. I mean, what she's going into is good. What you're paying for it is a reasonable amount. Mm-hmm. I mean, she's going to get this degree in the $30,000-$35,000 range, and, you know, be helping people. This is a good move. This is education the way it's supposed to be used, to actually cause you to make more and do good. You know, that's what education's for, as opposed to getting a degree in left-handed puppetry, which some people do, and this kind of stuff. So yeah, this is very, very good. Everything you brought to us was wise, except you guys just haven't looked at, we need to scale back lifestyle and keep on our investment goals.
Yep.
That's what I would do. So good question. Thanks for calling. Tommy is in Augusta, Georgia. Hey, Tommy, what's up?
Hey, Dave. Wow, I'm so happy I got through to you.
Me too.
Hi, we're happy you're here, Tommy.
What's up?
How can we help?
Hey, I've been listening to the podcast every day for maybe a month and a half. So much of your stuff just makes a whole lot of financial sense to me, and I want to. I admire the fact that you guys bring Christ onto the radio every single day, and you guys are not ashamed of the gospel.
Well, thank you, Tommy. How can we help you today?
Welcome. I have, I'm getting married June 2nd.
Yay!
I'm 52 years old. I've never been married. And I'm a little anxious, but I'm very excited. My fiance and I, between the two of us, I'll just talk about my debt right now. I have about $18,500 in student loan debt, probably another $3,000 in a furniture debt, and I also have my mortgage of $98,000. So when we get married, I will be moving to her house that she has, and we'll be selling mine. The market value right now, I believe, on mine is roughly $165,000. So I think I'm going to come out a little ahead. And I also have $20,000 in a high-yield savings account right now. I've been reluctant to pay off this student loan debt all because of this wishful thinking that they're going to forgive it. But I also understand that I received that money as a loan years ago.
Tommy, how can we best help you today?
I'm just trying to,
where to start?
I just don't know enough yet.
Okay.
About what you guys are teaching. I'm very interested in it, and I would like to. I've been telling my fiance about it, and the little bit that I know that I'm, you know, telling her about, I don't know if it's really clear, if I'm getting through clear to her.
Okay, so Tommy, what we're going to do first and foremost is Austin's going to pick up, and we're going to gift you and your fiance, who will be your wife in 2 weeks.
Our wedding gift.
A wedding gift, so... So congratulations, Tommy. You get a wedding and Financial Peace University coming up. And so you go through that together so you guys can at least be talking out of the same, you know, with the same language, out of the same perspective. But what you're going to do, Tommy, yeah, is I would take that money that in the high yield savings account, pay off the furniture first, get rid of that $3,000 loan, and then start tackling the student loan debt. And the beautiful thing is, Tommy, when you guys sell your home, you're going to come out with about $65,000, and if she has any debt, then you're going to use some of that money to pay off hers. You guys together are going to combine your finances. So you're going to look at all of your debt together, lined up, regardless of whose debt it is, and start working a plan to pay that off. You guys are going to combine incomes. You're going to be budgeting together. So that's really the first big step, and then get an emergency fund. Then you'll go on to baby steps 4, 5, and 6, but you're going to dive deep into all of that with Financial Peace University. So I would sit down and you guys go through that together, because that is the plan, and working together is a really key part of this. And I know all this is, you know, new to you, maybe even new to her, of just this idea of being intentional with your money. And so I think it's kind of a fun thing for you, Tommy, that you're entering a new season of life as a married man for the first time, and there's probably going to be this level of feeling like other changes are going to happen, and your money is probably going to look a lot different a year from now, which is very exciting, because you may actually end up controlling it and feeling in control of it for the first time ever. So hang on the line, Tommy. Austin will pick up.
Rachel Cruz, Ramsey Personality, is my co-host today. Thank you for joining us, America. We're so glad you're here. We love to give away money around here. I know that sounds weird. A place that is all about helping you with your money, we give money away. And we're giving away $500 a week this month and a $3,000 grand prize in the Ramsey Cash Giveaway. No purchase necessary. You can enter up to once a day. Must be 18 years older. And there's great deals in the RamseySolutions.com bookstore. And all the books, just about all of them, are bestsellers. And just about all of them are $10 right now. And that includes the Questions for Humans cards by second edition, the conversation cards out with Dr. John Deloney. So there's all kinds of things there. So be sure you check all this out. $10 sale and $500 a week at $3,000 total grand prize giveaway. All available at RamseySolutions.com/store. John is in Dallas. Hey, John, welcome to the Ramsey Show.
Thank you. It's an absolute pleasure speaking with you guys today.
You too. What's up?
So my employer offers an employee stock purchase plan at a 15% discount, and I'm the type of guy that buys and buys and buys and buys stocks and just holds and holds forever. And should I, when it comes to employee stock purchase plan, should I buy it and then wait for a year for long-term capital gains and sell it, or should I buy it and sell it right away? What would be the strategy for that?
Well, I generally don't recommend you buy it at all. If you're going to buy it, don't let it become more than 10% of your net worth. Single stocks are much too risky. And a 15% discount is nothing special. Every single company that has an employee stock option plan has a 15% discount. They're all set up that way. And so, and if you'll pull up your 52-week charts on the stock, unless it's a very unusual stock, you'll see as much as 15% variance during the 52 weeks. So, in other words, you could lose anything the discount is in one move of the stock.
Right.
And so it's not like it's a huge discount. 50% discount would be huge. 15% in the single stock, as volatile as they are, not that big a deal. So if you love your company and your company has a great track record and the stock looks like a great stock to buy and you're just absolutely chomping at the bit to do it, don't allow single stocks as a category to become more than 10% of your total net worth. John, I don't buy any single stocks. I don't own a one.
Yeah, and there's, I feel like a lot of employees, because we get this question on the regular, I feel like, because I feel like for some people too, they, if they have a good work experience and they love their company and they believe in it.
Doesn't mean the stock's good.
No, I know, but that's what I'm saying is like, it's a, there's an emotional tie for people with work as well when this comes into play. So you do want to, if that becomes, if those two collide, you want to detach the emotion from it. But I mean, I've talked to people and they're like, I just love my company so much. It's just so great. And I'm going to be here for it. And I just believe in it. And it's like, it's a more of an emotional type of investment. And that's not a wise way.
That's a really bad idea. Yeah. But the thing that the lack of diversification is what we're talking about here. When you've got all your eggs in one basket, some fool is twirling the basket, you know, and that's the old financial planning thing. The first time I ran into this, early, like 25 years ago, I was sitting one-on-one doing a coaching session with a lady who was 70 years old, and she had worked for Procter & Gamble for 40 years, and she had all of her 401k and all of her wealth, $780,000 in Procter & Gamble stock. Well, I don't remember what happened. I don't even remember what year it was, but that year, Procter & Gamble had some crises, and they lost 38% of their value.
Mm.
And so her $780,000 turned into like $400,000.
Yeah.
And she was freaking out. But the reason was she had left herself vulnerable. That's a high-risk play because you bet the farm. You went up to the booth at the Kentucky Derby, and you bet the family farm on one horse.
Mm-hmm.
And then somebody shoots the horse. I mean, you know, this.
Oh my gosh.
Well, I mean, this is what happens, right? This is the kind of garbage you get into.
Or the horse didn't win.
I know. Well, I mean, it could be just that simple. But yeah, it'd be more dramatic if you did it my way. But the, I mean, this is what happens in these companies, right?
Yeah, totally.
I mean, it's just you lose your mind. I'm now in the George Camel camp now.
Yeah, I've got Ramsey the,
I've now got the horse
horses.
Haters after me, but I wasn't killing horses. It was a bad metaphor. Okay.
Oh my gosh.
Anyway,
we love
the
horses.
Whole booth is in the floor laughing.
My kids love Spirit. The cartoon, it's great. We love horses here.
Yes.
Regardless of how it comes.
Anyway, don't put all of your eggs in one basket. Don't bet the farm on one horse. Don't have a large portion of your net worth any more than 10% in single stocks. Tons of research projects, like hundreds of them, that will show you that individuals buying individual stocks, thinking they know what they're doing, lose money more often than they make money, and on average only make about a 7% rate of return on their portfolio because they don't know what the flip they're doing. They're not diversified, and it's a bad idea. So I only buy mutual funds for that reason, and I know a lot about it. I mean, I know how to pick a stock. And it wouldn't be based on the fact that I like the color of the company that was on the sign or some kind of crap that people do all the time. So, I mean, you know, none of that. We're going to get into the actual financials on it. But all of that to say, I don't want to make a 7% rate of return because I've made over 12% by people who pick stocks for a living all day long for a $1 billion mutual fund. They're smarter than me.
Yeah.
and they're more specialized, and they spend their whole life on every little nuance of that.
Well, and what's interesting today, and because of apps, technology, and just the ability for the average person to jump in to the market.
Well, stuff like Robinhood.
There's an easier access point. So people are doing it more and more because it's accessible. I mean, like you can just, it's right there. You just download
Robin
the app.
Well, Robinhood has acted like they have democratized trading. No, you didn't. You're just an app where people can buy stocks and do stupid butt stuff, and they do it all the time. That's all it is. And that's how you got into the GameStop thing.
Right.
That's how you got into all this other
stuff. But what I'm saying is the average consumer back in the 80s, it was a much...
Day traders.
Yeah, it was a whole thing.
We had computers and we could connect.
In the 80s.
And we could, yes. We
barely internet though.
Yeah, and we could buy stuff and do stock trades. Now, I had a friend that was a stock trader. That's what he did for a living. He lost 78% of his money in 1 year. Yeah, it was just... dumber than a rock, you know. I mean, it's just this. I've seen it over and over and over and over again. So all that to say, John, not saying you're dumb, and I'm not saying what you're doing horrible. I'm just giving you some guidelines and the reasons behind them. Don't do more than 10% of your total net worth in a stock. Pick the stock for the right reasons. 15% discount is not much. Those are our comments on your question. So really, really good thing to think about. So it even says it in the Bible. Spread your portions to 7, yes to 8, for disaster may come upon the land. Or the horse.
The poor horse.
Disaster could come. You know, disaster could come.
Sad about that
and
horse.
So, that poor horse. Damn. And so, yeah. But the metaphorical horse. But yeah. Don't bet the family farm at the racetrack on one race. And that's essentially what you're doing, right? Because you got all your net worth tied up in a single play and...
versus a mutual fund, which is 90 to 200
different
stocks in there. So that's the safety of it. That's where
The spreading out of your money. Spread your money around. That's diversification. You hear financial people say, I have a well diversified portfolio. Well, that's all that means. You spread your money around. Money is like manure. It makes more when you spread it. You know, doesn't you left in one pile stinks. Spread it out, grow stuff. That's how it works. So same exact thing. And just keep it. You know, keep it simple. Don't try to be fancy, and you'll always make more money, people. You'll always make more money in the long haul. This is The Ramsey Show. Rachel Cruz, Ramsey Personality, is my co-host today, number one best-selling author. KC is in New York City. Hi, KC. How are you?
Hey, Dave, I'm good. How are you?
Better than I deserve. What's up?
So I'm kind of a newer listener, and before I actually found you, I had filed bankruptcy.
Mm-hmm.
And my current bank, they offer it's kind of like a loan, but it's not an actual loan, to help you rebuild your credit.
Mm-hmm.
And what you do is you make payments every month to them, and they turn it in as you've made on-time payments. And then at the end, you actually get what you put into it. And they were telling me that with me wanting to buy a house within the next 2 years, that would be something that I should do, because the bankruptcy would follow me for so long.
Yeah.
And I was just kind of wanting to get your opinion on it.
So you filed a Chapter 7 bankruptcy, a total bankruptcy.
Yes.
Wiped out all the bills.
Yes, sir.
Okay. What happened?
So to be quite honest, I am in recovery. Mm-hmm. I was an addict pretty much my entire life.
How old are you?
And I had a lot of things. I'm 38.
What were you on?
Heroin.
How long you been dry?
2 years.
Congratulations.
Yeah, congrats.
Proud of you.
Mm-hmm.
Thank you. Okay. All right. And what was the size of the bankruptcy? How much debt did you have?
All in total, it was about $68,000.
Okay. All right. Well, KC, in 1988, I filed bankruptcy. My wife, Sharon, and I lost everything. Because I was stupid, and I went too far in debt. one of the conclusions I came to coming out of that bankruptcy, and as you said, you're kind of new to our stuff, was that I want to avoid debt. I hate debt. If you look up Dave Ramsey on the internet, about the first thing you're going to see is he hates debt. You know, right after somebody's pissed off at me about something, but somewhere around in there, I'll have Dave hates debt, right? You follow me?
Yes, sir.
And yes, the reason is that obviously it didn't land well for me, didn't land well for you. You know, it landed us in a mess. It was not a blessing to us. And so, and your most powerful wealth building tool going forward is your debt, is your income, staying out of debt. And I'll give you this. I haven't seen the statistics in a while, and I wish Dr. John Deloney was here. He could probably quote one for me. But the recidivism rate, in other words, staying sober versus not staying sober, has a lot to do with controlling your life and keeping it very clean, peaceful, and simple. Would you agree with that?
Yes, sir.
As opposed to hectic, out of control, chaotic, all those kinds of things. Debt is all of those things. It's hectic. It's chaotic. It's you're no longer in control of your money. It has to go to someone else and all that kind of stuff. So I'm making a case here for you to consider that part of your sobriety even is connected to your continued sobriety is connected to keeping your life real clean, real simple. And that's no debt. So I'm gonna try to sell you as hard as I can on you staying away from debt. Now, once we've done that, then we say, okay, why would I need to rebuild my credit? Because the credit rebuild thing is a joke. It's all about, I need credit. Why? So I can go into debt. Why? So I can get credit. Why? So I can go into debt. Why? So I can get credit. Why? So I can go into debt. Well, I mean, it's a dog chasing its tail, this whole I'm going to build my credit thing. Can you get a house after filing Chapter 7 bankruptcy in 2 years using this bank program? I doubt it. I think they lied to you, or they don't know what they're talking about. I don't think you're going to get approved in 24 months from a discharge date on a Chapter 7 for a traditional mortgage. I think you might 36 months or 48 months later get approved for a mortgage with absolutely no credit at all after your Chapter 7 bankruptcy. A Chapter 7 bankruptcy stays on your credit bureau report for 10 years. It does not count against you for purposes of a mortgage, but 3 to 4 years. I don't think you're going to get a mortgage in 2 years, no matter what you do, unless you get a subprime ripoff mortgage from this bank that's teasing you with this. I would stay away from those people, KC.
Okay.
You following
okay,
all this?
That makes sense. Yes, sir. That makes sense.
Cool. How's your family?
We are all back together now and doing fine.
Back together with your wife or what?
My wife and my children.
Wow. Yes,
that's awesome.
How many children have you got?
Three.
Okay. I want you to get a house. I don't want the house to get you, and I don't want you to step into a trap pursuing a house too aggressively. That's,
okay.
That's what we're trying to avoid.
So renting, KC.
Renting is not bad in your case.
You're okay.
Just rent for a little while. We're putting our life back together after a traumatic life experience. And dude, let me just tell you, we work with addicts all the time because 100% of addicts have financial problems eventually. So I've worked with addicts for 30 years, and if you beat heroin, you are what's known as an unbelievably courageous, strong guy. That is a tough one. You've been dry 2 years. You're amazing. You hang on.
Thank
you do this.
I really appreciate that.
Yeah, you play through. You're fighting the big dragon, and you can win. You're the guy that can do it. But, man, I'm telling you, you're a beast. You get it. We want to help. We want to be part of your recovery. We're going to put you and your wife through Financial Peace University free, and you guys go learn how to handle money and become.
Really?
Absolutely. Not joking at all, man. We love people like you.
Thank you.
Yeah. You go get
Thank
that stuff, and
so
we'll get you into a house the right way, man.
Yeah.
And not let that house get you. And you stay away from banks. You can't trust them. If you can tell their line, if their mouth moves, then most of them.
Yeah, and if it seems too good to be true.
There's a few good bankers out there, but good gracious, the rest of you people. Go ahead.
Well, I was just saying, if it sounds too good to be true, then they know, and they're probably feeding on exactly what they know that you want, which is a house. So they're going to create a formula, do something in order to convince you to stay with them. So,
you know, it's 1988.
Slowing down. Yeah, I would say, Casey, Dave said it earlier, but truly, I'm like, just you guys rebuilding your family after this and slowing down, renting, not making like massive big decisions, right? Getting a steady income, you guys budgeting together, start saving, pay, you know, there's just a beauty in rebuilding this, and it's going to take time, and it's going to be a slower process, but that's actually, I think, the wisest way to do it. And so that includes something like a purchase of a house.
Yeah. Filed bankruptcy in 1988. A banker told me, go sign up for every financial magazine. Subscribe to Money Magazine, Forbes, anything like that. And I did. And within 5 months, I was getting pre-approved credit cards.
Mm.
We had decided not to borrow money, so we just chopped them up. But, I mean, that's how dumb the system is and how dumb a banker is. Okay, you just filed Chapter 7 bankruptcy on millions of dollars worth of real estate because you're an idiot. So the first thing you do is go sign up for a whole bunch of financial magazines so you can get pre-approved credit cards to really prove you're an idiot. This was me, okay? I mean, this is like, how dumb can you be? But there's,
well,
there's always somebody wants...
Of course he wants you in it.
There's always somebody wants to build your credit.
Yeah.
Just shoot me. Oh, my God. Just build my credit. Yeah. Why? So I can get into debt. Why? So I can build my credit. Why? So I can get into debt. And then we worship at the altar of the great FICO. Great FICO, you bring us offerings. We bring you offerings so you can be our provider. You bring us good things, great FICO. We get good things because we have big FICO. Everyone wants big FICO. How dumb are we? Man, you people have lost your minds out there. And I used to be captain of you. Now I'm not. This is the Ramsey Show.
It's Rachel Cruz. If you love the show and want a deeper dive on your money journey, we have a weekly newsletter that gives you trending and helpful articles and tips on following the Ramsey way. Just go to RamseySolutions.com today to sign up for our newsletter. Again, that's RamseySolutions.com to sign up for our weekly newsletter.
Hey, it's James, producer of The Ramsey Show. This episode is over, but check the episode notes for links to products and services you heard about during this episode. Thanks for listening.